Hi, and welcome to the Dark Web Vlogs, where I'm sharing the experiences I've had working with clients on some of the most outrageous deals being run over the dark web. Imagine someone who feels they have the ability and the right to pass judgment on us as a population because of their loss, now you lose. And if their punishment, as it were massive enough, widespread, and hit many, would anyone really have the chance to fight back and win? In this job, we sought out one man on a quest. He did not win, and this would be his final journey. He's smart, calculating, and connected. He was friendly, successful, and would always be there to help a neighbor. But not anymore. Now he's only one thing. Angry. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. I've worked a lot of jobs, and today is my account of a job where the race is on and people come together to try to complete what could very well be an impossible task. Take a listen and enjoy. First off, the reason I chose this job to share over this holiday is because it's a holiday for the United States. July 4th is a day of independence, a day to remember those who fought for our country and freedoms that we have today. Each time this holiday comes around, I am reminded of the job I'm about to tell you today, and others that share a similarity. And that similarity is how even if you are just one person, there's a lot of damage you can do, even to a large nation. The United States enjoys their freedoms, and they also feel secure with our protections. A lot goes on behind the scenes to provide that security, and many times, as you learn even in my stories, the average person might not actually understand or know about what all goes on. On any given day, there could be any kind of crisis. We don't think of this when we head to work in the morning, or we go to get that latte that we love, or pick up our children at daycare. No, we as people are capable, instead, of only seeking out the rights that have been handed out to us and what we feel we deserve. But what about those people that protect who we are, those that chose that commitment and challenge to take on those things that you may or may not ever even know or find out about? But they do it so that things can continue. So yes, I chose to tell this story over the July 4th holiday because it's time to remember them, the ones taking on all of those things. And whether you like it all or not, they still are doing it. When I received this request, there was no question in my mind that this was something major. I was contacted by a man who I will refer to as Jonathan Todd. He flagged the request with my own code that is only handed out to a few people, and the code told me that this was urgent and very serious. Jonathan requests that no time is wasted and that he will send transportation to me so that I can come to the Pentagon as soon as possible. And what that means is that I'm going to go to the helipad, where I've traveled to and from him before, and he will send a helicopter to me. At the time I received this request, I was not at the warehouse. I was actually returning from another meeting about a whole different request. So I need a few hours to be able to meet his transportation. And at that time, that's really all I can tell him. I'm able to move pretty fast. And within 2.5 hours, I am at the helipad and the chopper's already waiting for me. I don't bring anyone from my team with me. They were already halfway preparing to go on the request I just met about, so I have them just hold steady and stand by and wait to hear from me. When I get to the Pentagon, there's a woman there to meet me. I haven't met her before, I don't know who she is, but I get out, I walk over to her, and turns out she's just there to take me to where I need to go. And what she says is that they are ready for me. I had no idea that I'd be meeting anyone else for this other than Jonathan, at least not right away. But I know better than to ask the girl who's taking me over where they are and who they are, because she has no idea who I am and most likely has no idea who I'm meeting now. And the walk to our meeting room reminds me of how interesting the Pentagon is. You know, if you haven't been there, everything's very nice. Walls lined with giant pictures of very important people from the past as well as the present. Everything is neat and placed perfectly. And, you know, although I've never actually seen any cleaning crew of any kind, I just can't imagine what they go through to keep that place looking like it does. At least the parts of it that I've seen. The meeting room that we get to has security, of course, and my host opens the door and I walk inside. Clearly, meetings going on at the Pentagon would be very secure. But for this meeting, you can't even see inside where the meeting room is. Even as the door closes behind me, there's nothing to see yet. So I'm in this small room, and then there's another door waiting for me, sort of like an entrance you might see in a house or something. I look up and I find the camera, and I know that they can see that I've arrived at this point. And sure enough, the second door opens, and then I walked through. So expecting to find a group of people, since I was told they were waiting, I was a little confused when I only saw Jonathan sitting at the table. Now, he invites me to sit down, which I do, and then he shares that there are actually others at this meeting. And then he points to this frosted glass, this very large panel of frosted glass that's along the long wall, and he lets me know that it's one-way glass, frosted, on our side. And, I mean, that's just how the Pentagon is. It's very tight with its security. And there are secrets. And right now, for me, it's who's behind that glass. That I don't know, but I do know it must be someone important. And all I can do is wait to see if I get more information at a later time, which I do, but later, and it's minimal. First, though, Jonathan starts to go into what the situation is. He tells me that there has been a very high-level security breach. Tells me that there is something that has been stolen from the Pentagon. Well, and then he explains that these items weren't actually the Pentagon's. Instead, they were just located there under very strict security, also by someone else, not of the Pentagon. In one of the lower levels, and that's all I'm really going to say about that, there's this special chamber that holds a very special visitor who is in charge of protecting and securing this item that is meant to keep us in line. That's what I'm getting from Jonathan. And, you know, right then I ask him, what does he mean by keep us in line and who is us? Well, he says he can only tell me so much unless I agree to take the case. So what he will say, though, is keeping us in line means moving us forward, keeping us moving forward, keeping us from being combative with those out there. So, I mean, of course, I can read between the lines here. I mean, he's talking about those of another world. That's what it sounds like. I mean, if anyone knows that they exist, the Pentagon does. It's all about having control. And what he's saying about whoever these special visitors are, they clearly must have some advantage over us, or this would not be happening. So I just acknowledge this, and he continues. He explains that there's something out there that never should have been, that since a long time ago, it's been tucked away and secured. And he says it's actually a type of threat, but only if it's used, only if the relationship and agreements are broken. I can think of it as a highly powered weapon, he says, and we need to hunt down the thief who has taken it. And he compares it to, and this is a very exaggerated example, and he does that on purpose to just get the point across, but he poses to me that, say, there was someone who broke into an intercontinental ballistic missile base and stole a nuclear warhead, and they threatened to use it on the innocent. I mean, something would have to be done about that. The threat is massive and would destroy many. You know, but here we are in today's world, and that doesn't seem very possible or likely, does it? Not to most. And although what's happened here didn't seem possible either, it obviously was and did happen. And they need to stop this person before what they have is used. He goes on to say that this person actually worked at the Pentagon, and the whole mess got started when he was rejected for a position he was trying for. He'd been with the Pentagon a number of years and did great work. It's just that when they tested him in the different areas required for this higher-up position, he failed a section. Well, he didn't pass the evaluation, and it was the psychological portion. He was still admired, though, and liked by those he worked with. And of course, he still held a great position. He could have moved up in other ways eventually, but it left this man a couple of levels down in rank than he wanted to be. And he basically went mad over it. Long story short, he stole access into this secured area. And when he knew the coast was clear, in he went, and then out it went. No one could have ever seen this coming, and this is something that would normally never happen. And while they would love to take the time to dig into exactly how it happened before they do anything else, well, they'll eventually get to that, but now they have this urgent matter at hand. So while they work on how he mastered all of this, this whole situation has to be handled. So there were a lot of moving parts, a lot of things going on, and a lot of things to figure out. But basically, what Jonathan and his frosted gang behind the glass wanted me for, and my team, should I say yes, would be to track this guy down, track him down and find out what he's been up to since he disappeared. Apparently this guy, and I'm going to call him Mr. Hill, because this thing here was big. And Henry Hill, if you didn't know, is part of the Lufthansa heist back in 1978. It was the largest cash robbery committed on American soil at that time. He later turned FBI agent, by the way. But anyway, our guy has done something big and is connected, so I think it fits. So I'm sitting there with Jonathan. I just try to confirm. This guy took something very dangerous and now is on the run, could be anywhere. And how dangerous did they even think this guy was before he did all of this? And when he was being evaluated, did he show a violent side in his psych exam? Or did anyone think anything about him at all before this? And before Jonathan answers, a call comes into this box that's sitting on the table. Jonathan taps the button that's on it and then puts his hand to his ear. You know, I turn to the frosted glass and I realize it's them and they're calling into Jonathan. He listens for a bit and then he takes his hand away from his ear. And then he folds his hands down on the table and gets this more serious look, as if he didn't have one already. He tells me that no, this man was not seen as a threat. In fact, he was someone that could help protect us from threats. Even in his psychological exam, violence was not one of his key outcomes. Jonathan looks over to the glass and then back to me, then goes on to explain that Mr. Hill was part of protective intelligence and he knew a lot about the threats out there, people that are threats and what they're capable of. One of their big concerns, in fact, is that he is connected. I mean, he's in possession of a potentially deadly weapon. Now he's gone rogue and has quite possibly lost his mind. So might he try to bring someone else in for assistance to carry out his plan? And Jonathan tells me that they know of his plan because Mr. Hill left a manifesto in what he stole's place. And it explained it all, how Mr. Hill was angry at what they had done refusing him the position, how there was no loyalty, and nothing meant anything anymore. And he proclaimed that he would now save the people in this world from the pathetic lives they thought they were living. And then may whoever comes out the winner in the end take over this godforsaken planet and do with it what's right. There's a lesson to be learned, Mr. Hill wrote in his manifesto. May the best man win. So, I mean, as you can see, we're dealing with an extremely serious situation. I do have to ask, you know, trying to get as much information as I can. I mean, who are those guys behind the glass? Well, Jonathan gets another buzz from the box. And then, without giving any names of anyone that is attending the meeting behind that glass, Jonathan does at least give me the lowdown of what those people represent. So, we have CDC. That'd be a representative from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Not really sure what that means yet. DOD, Department of Defense. That seems to make sense here. PFPA, that's the Pentagon Force Protection Agency. And that includes threat management. And Mr. Hill had been a part of that. And then two people came in from the intelligence community, one specifically from artificial intelligence and the other from special ops. Without really any details there, that could be anything. And finally, a CIA officer. He does say that there's someone else behind that glass, but that he has a little more explaining to do first. So after he lists them all out, he gets into then why I am there. He tells me that I am there in lieu of an active CIA agent, at least for the time being, because of the work that I do. Because of that work, they'd rather this was handled by someone with a CIA background, but who also has the experience I've created for myself in dark ops, and with the very unbelievable. I'm there for a reason, and each person behind that glass would be on my team, if you will. They're not to work with me, but they're on my side, and each of them have a purpose. And they'll do their searching as well and will send me any good leads, but they want me on the ground to stop this guy, find him. And another reason is no one else at the Pentagon at the moment knows about this problem or this plan. They don't know me either, and they can't, not yet, until things are more under control. And the reason being is they need to confirm that there are no other rogue members still on the site and involved in any way. Mr. Hill cannot get wind that I am the one coming. So that makes sense. And this is a big decision for me to make, and a decision I cannot make without knowing exactly what this guy has taken. Of course, I would need to know that. And Jonathan is ready, and he gets right into that now that he knows I'm at least receptive to the idea of helping them out. So Jonathan explains that over 2,000 years ago, there was an outbreak, the bubonic plague, the Black Plague, or Black Death, if you prefer. And he tells me quite bluntly that it's not what everyone thinks, that it was actually done all by design and put in place by aliens that we didn't even know existed at the time, but it was a test. You know, humans are always being tested, he says, for the mistakes they make and the fact that there are so many inconsistencies. You know, we don't move forward together as a race. We only move forward as individuals. And this was a test to see if we could come together. We could get more done that way, and we could be a better help to them as a partner. And so, there are vials, both on Earth and up there, of an extremely high dose of this plague. And they've been saved all this time with the idea that as we progressed and relationships with these other beings were born and became more solid, that the threat would hold us to our promises. Humans were told that they were sporadic, untrustworthy as a group, and unreliable as a group as well. I mean, how could they count on us to do what we say we will? They have things that they can use from us and vice versa, but for the two groups to come to agreements and work together towards common goals, there needed to be a level of control. And so, hence this threat that could be used if we ever went back on our commitments. But at the same time, we'd be allowed to remain in control of ourselves for the most part. You know, we have leaders in place, rules, laws, and together we could try to move forward as a group. And progress could be made between the two worlds. But now that threat has been taken. And not only was it out there to help keep our world from entering complete chaos, it was not used again because they believed that they could trust us. They just kept it as a safety measure, a backup in case things got out of control. Well, it's out of control now. And there are actually more vials of this that are floating around our planet right now in a giant spaceship somewhere. I mean, they're only going to give us so much time to fix this. And so, Jonathan tells me, if I haven't figured it out by now, it's the alien guard that is also behind that glass, the one that has been down here on Earth, keeping watch over this vial. And he's livid that this happened under his watch. And I mean, when I heard this, my jaw dropped. And then I almost actually just had to laugh, you know, an insane laugh, of course, because how outrageous this all was. The Black Plague. But then again, sure, of course. After all, why did it seem to just go away for the most part? I mean, sure, there were remnants of it that still existed, but we don't really see it. Of course, we would think that, or been led to believe, that we beat it. And there it has sat all this time. We would never be prepared for that. This is definitely a large threat if Mr. Hill reaches his goals. I can't say no to this, and my team would not want to say no to this. After learning this information, I look to the glass, and then I look to Jonathan, and I tell them that they have a deal. That, of course, I would need a full download of what they can tell me, and then I will need to prepare my team, and it all has to happen in a hurry. And okay, so I do get the data dump of what they can tell me, and I get my team together. And I mean, they're amazed that this guy could even pull this off, because really, this would seem like an impossible thing to do. And they're just amazed at by what it all is. So in the data dump, they gave us 4 locations that they want me to at least start in. We have pictures, files, electronic and otherwise, fingerprint data, access to his DNA if and when we should need that. And then a picture of this vial was shown to me, but I'm not allowed to take that with me. That's a large vial, not a little one. There were a few more things, but those are the bigger things that get us on a path and give us something to work with. But the biggest thing, really, that we found out is what happens when we find our Mr. Hill? Well, remember, he did not technically steal from the Pentagon, and so it's not the Pentagon that will be dealing with him. Instead, he has stolen from our alien partners. And if we can find Mr. Hill in a timely manner, and really before he does any damage to this world or they decide to, if he is found, then they will be the ones dealing with him. And that's not a request. It's basically a demand, a requirement. So where to begin? Well, we will start with the cities that the Frosteds provided us. They pointed us in the direction of, first, Carmel, Indiana. Mr. Hill grew up there, so he might go there as a stop by to see his family one more time, or he may just choose to actually start there since he's trying to save the world. He might want to start with those close to him. Our files include his family and close friends that are still there. Then we have Southampton or East Hampton. First of all, Mr. Hill has a house there that he alternates using with some of his friends. So they're all co-owners. They also invested in this property. They're already keeping an eye on that house. However, Mr. Hill loves that area, or used to, and he may either be staying with friends or even taken over a house of one of his friends, possibly keeping them hostage. The files give us his home address there and those of his known close friends. We have Wall Street, and that's for the obvious. All of those people trying to take money to make money. Although he did invest, Mr. Hill always held a grudge every time he ever lost even a dollar. Even in his investing, he wanted to win and was a sore loser when things were not in his favor. Now, where on Wall Street? Well, there were a few different things. The files gave us the name of his investor group, his personal stockbroker, and his financial advisor. So we'd start there. And lastly, the last location was Fort Lauderdale, Florida. This is where his grandparents retired and passed. And Mr. Hill was known to say sometimes, well, actually a lot of times, after they died, that it was such a waste that they chose to live out the end of their lives in that way. Sure, it's nice there, but to leave all you knew and loved to play golf and wait to die? He thought it was just morbid and a waste of one's golden years. It was a thing with him. And if Mr. Hill really thought they made bad choices and were ruining their lives in some ridiculous situation there, then they, in that area, could very well be some of the people living out these pathetic lives that he talked about in his manifesto. And the files gave us the condominiums where his grandparents lived, in case that's a sensitive place for him in particular. And so we had what we had, and we would go. This hunt was on. This all was a lot of groundwork in a short amount of time. In Carmel, we do find out that Mr. Hill was there, but nothing happened. He wasn't there long. He had not been to the Hamptons or Fort Lauderdale, but we did end up tracking him down on Wall Street. And it's not like we just walked down the street and bumped into the guy, but we did find him. And I had my entire team involved, by the way. No one stayed back to hold down anything, because none of it was going to matter if we didn't find this guy. So we're all in New York at that point. Frankie, he's watching the entrance to Mr. Hill's investment firm. Scarlett is watching and waiting and waiting and waiting at the coffee shop Mr. Hill's stockbroker basically runs to every day before and after work, hoping that maybe she can catch Mr. Hill there as well. And, you know, she's Miss Yoga, if you didn't listen to her story. So coffee and sitting in a coffee shop all day isn't really her thing. But, you know, when you do jobs like ours, anything goes. Harley rented a room in Mr. Hill's favorite hotel, where we know he's actually staying, and pretty much scoped out every single room and guest. Ryder actually became a client at the investment firm, just in case. She wanted to get on the inside. And then Jagger and I, well, we watched the big guns, the New York Stock Exchange. Who went in, who came out, and who was just lurking around. And that's when we spotted him, or should I say her. Yes, that took us a little bit to figure out, but our Mr. Hill became a Mrs., if you will, and started just hanging around. Getting dressed up like that and done up like that was a great disguise for him. If you saw him, you wouldn't really question it. And the other thing is that with so many people coming and going at the exchange and always in a hurry, who would really notice that she was still there just hanging around? They really only notice their watches and the time while they, you know, think about where they're supposed to be next. You really had to be on the watch of this place to figure it out because she was really good at moving from one location to another and not all in front of the main entrance. And once we figured it out and got pictures, then the other members of my team realized they had also spotted her. She was at the hotel. He was. And although he never met his broker at the coffee shop or tried to corner him, Scarlett says that that woman, right, Mr. Hill in disguise, waited for the broker to get a cab and then jumped right in. And that was right outside the coffee shop. So the exchange, the broker, and the hotel, that gave us a lot. First thing, talk to the broker and the financial advisor and find out if Mr. Hill has come to them with anything that would give away his real and true plans as of now and what he really wanted to do here. I mean, by the way he forced his way into that cab with his broker, he obviously wanted to talk to him pretty bad. But what about? Well, we know the broker is always in a hurry and always on the run, so it won't really be that hard to catch him off guard. But the advisor's different. Whole different story. He's calm, on time every day, works late often. So here's our approach. For the broker, I just get him in a cab because that works so well for Mr. Hill. And it works. For the advisor, well, Frankie simply walks up to him and gets him to talk. And either way, from both of these guys, we get some very good information. Number one, Mr. Hill has sold everything, as far as all of his investment stocks go, and fired his broker. Number two, he told his advisor that he can just have it all. Now that he's sold it, he can have it all. Of course, that man can't and won't do that. But after their little meet, he hasn't even been able to get a hold of Mr. Hill to try to resolve it. Well, we advise both of them that Mr. Hill has become extremely dangerous and can no longer be trusted. And if they don't want real trouble real quick, should he come back around, they should not tell him that we have come around. Mr. Hill moved money and did some things with that. But the biggest piece of information that we got was this certain date he talked about. Said he just didn't need any of his money anymore after this date. Said the investments were a waste of time and that money in his life was no longer important to him anyway, and that after this certain date, really wouldn't matter to him at all. And we know that Mr. Hill only has one motive at this point. The only reason a date like that would matter to him as a date to give up his means for a better life is that things are going to change. Because in his mind, everyone will get sick. He has that vial with him, and we need to get it. So the next step was to get to Mr. Hill and get that vial. I let Jonathan know all about Mr. Hill's plans, his disguise. We've located him. You know, of course, we have to keep him updated, you know, so he can update the entire team. But we really didn't have much more to say than that other than, you know, we've located him and we're going in to get him. And that's significant. We also let Jonathan know that Mr. Hill did go to Carmel. I mean, he didn't seem to do anything there, so maybe that was his little bittersweet goodbye to the world as he knew as a, you know, young boy and younger man. So for what it's worth, the man still had some sentiment maybe, you know, still left in him at his last moments. That was clearly gone now. It certainly didn't help him in the bigger picture either. We had to try to see if he had this vial in the hotel room. There was really nowhere else he could have it. He did not live in New York. While in her hotel room, Harley did more checking around also, and she didn't have time to do all of this before we left for this hunt. And we found out that Mr. Hill had no banking there. He had no safety deposit boxes, no storage units, nothing like that. You know, we really eliminated all the other options, so it had to be the hotel. Now, I had my scanner with me, and that's where I'm going to start. Now, you can't just bust into the guy's room, because for all we know, he sleeps with that vial and is ready to pounce on anyone that moves. But the scanner can see through walls to a degree. You know, it's not going to give me a Kodak moment, but it is going to tell me, or at least show me, an outline of any items beyond the walls we are scanning. So I'd like to get into the room that's directly below him. Harley has a room on his same floor, so we have access there. But again, I don't really want to go in through his front door. And being next door to him wouldn't really give me the view that I want. So the only question now was, who is in that room today? Because we need access. Using Harley's room as our base, being extremely careful that Mr. Hill never sees us coming or going, I start in and go through the phone line where I can get into the hotel system, and I see that there's a Mr. David Briggs staying in the room that I want to get into. And I can also see that on most days, this guy's out, probably in meetings and things. And this will be a break-in, but it's got to be done. The scan will take about 45 minutes. So the next day, we each take our posts. Harley watches the room. Scarlett watches the elevators. Ryder is keeping an eye on the stairways. And we make sure that Mr. Hill does not leave. And then when I make sure that Mr. Briggs takes off for the day, Jagger follows him and will keep us all posted. And I make my way into his room. The coast stays clear as Mr. Briggs is attending some financial conference, we learn. I get the scan done. Analyzing it back in Harley's room, we all agree that we see this box. It's not big, but it will fit the dimensions of the vial. It's got to be a safe of some kind. And this isn't a small vial, like I said earlier. You know, maybe, you know, the ones that you've seen when they take your blood for a test, it's about double that size. And without seeing any more of his equipment, we really have no idea how he's planning on releasing this plague to the free world. And we just need a plan to make sure that none of that happens. So we need Mr. Hill and we need his room before he takes off to any sort of new destination. So now we work on that plan. Harley keeps watch on any movement for him. And she does see him go out for food at about 7 o'clock that evening. Again, the best way, the safest way to find out what's going on and get our bearings is when he's not there, in case he has a defense. I mean, the guy just left the Pentagon. He knows that surely they would have sent someone to find him. He knows this. But with us being unfamiliar to him, he would have no idea who we are. He'd be on the lookout for someone else entirely. This gives us an advantage. And now, he's at dinner. I mean, even if you do want to take out as many people as you can and start the Black Death all over again, the guy needs to eat. We're going to use that time. Mr. Hill leaves around 7, with Harley watching the doors, Scarlett's in the lobby in case anything happens there, and Jagger is on Mr. Hill's tail. He's an excellent tracker of all things, but just in case Jagger does lose our target, that's why we have so much cover everywhere else. So for this break-in, Frankie, Ryder, and I are in his room by 7:30. Frankie keeps an eye on the hallway through the peephole in case anyone comes knocking, and Ryder and I move in and get to work. We can see the safe right there, when you know just where we saw it in the scanned outlines when we get there. We move slowly at first because we have to check for traps, traps that could actually get us killed, and we find one. With every step closer to that safe, you know, we're looking at everything. Is something going to fall from the ceiling? Is there something that we might walk into? Well, no, but what we did find as I'm about to take one more step forward are droplets. Not droplets on the carpet or anything like that. He's got these little glass plates. You wouldn't even notice them if you weren't looking. And as we bend down to check it all out, we find there's a few of them scattered about. And on each one is a dark brown drop of liquid. And they're small, but small can still be absorbed into your skin. That's all it would take. We have gloves on, of course, and we very carefully bag those and put them in our pack to take out of there. And then it's to the safe. Now, we have no idea how long this guy is going to be at dinner. He's out by himself, you know, for nourishment. He's not meeting friends or out to mingle right now, and he might be home soon. But we need into that safe. And this is one of those moments where you really need to take your time, but also move as fast as you can, you know, at the same time. Well, that's me, and I want into that safe. The safe is a safe, right? It's small, but still, it's a locked safe. It's just not the big bad kind is all, and it's not ghost-proof. I am able to get in, and now we really need to be careful. In the safe, in this black box that's all padded, we see this vial, and it's full. I mean, full. I mean, yeah, he used some of it to lay around his little traps, but this thing is full of this dark brown liquid that just looks like sickness. We also find a file full of papers. And it's not, you know, a neat file. You know, some of the pages are crumpled and they look more like they were stuffed in there than actually filed. So it looks like he put it together in a hurry. But it's a file and we want it. So we clear out that safe. But then we leave it and we close it and leave it also. We won't notice at first. He knows where he set those traps, you know, pretty close to it. So he knows where to walk when he comes in. So we're hoping that maybe he doesn't notice anything right away when he walks in the door. But even if he does, by the time he tries to check his safe, we're going to have him. Ryder and I have the goods, and we need to clear out of there and get it all out of there. I have a driver ready, standing by, and I call on him so that we can leave the premises. This vial cannot be anywhere near Mr. Hill should anything go wrong with our plan. My team starts to move in. Harley and Scarlett leave their posts, since we know that Jagger's still okay and says the guy's almost finishing up with his heroes that he walked 5 blocks to get. So he's almost done, but we still have time. And basically, the rest of my team, aside from Jagger, takes position inside of Mr. Hill's room. And when Mr. Hill gets there, he walks in the door, nothing seems to be out of place to him, and Frankie uses that time and applies this neck hold to him. And I mean, Frankie gets people with this, and he's actually the only person on my team that has mastered it completely. But Mr. Hill goes down. He was completely caught off guard and didn't even have a chance, not really. He did scramble though, you know, looking around and seeing everyone, he went into a complete panic. But by then it was too late. And just so you know, the certain date that I'm not going to mention here, but that I talked about was 2 days after we caught this guy. We just made it. So, report goes back to Jonathan, and we restrain Mr. Hill. We leave when we receive the instructions of where to go, which is another helipad, to catch our ride back. The vial and all the contents have been put into this secured and one closed, completely sealed container. And once that thing was all closed up, it won't get opened until it's in the hands of those waiting for it, which, as I figured, are the Frosteds, or one of them anyway. Now, in the helicopter, we're all thinking that we're going back to the Pentagon, right? But before we take off, they tell us that they have a stop before we get back, and they blindfold us. And I've told you guys this before, you know, this happens. I've had to do it, and it happens to us. So you just have to respect it, and you go with it. And where do we end up? On the edge of some farm. Where? I don't know. But there's this open space in the middle of this farmland, and that's where we land. Now, Mr. Hill, he just starts demanding to know where we are. But that doesn't go over well by Frankie or the guys that were there. We're led out of the helicopter and we're greeted by Jonathan. And he's standing outside this very large limousine. The doors are all closed. And I can see it's, you know, very big for one man. And he just looks at me and nods. The Frosteds are in there. I mean, did I know that for sure? Well, you could say no. But it was a moment where he let me know and I understood. And then you could just see Jonathan change from his cordial greeting to very strict. He knocked on the window of the limo twice, and then two very large men get out of the front. They thanked Frankie for all he had done, and then they take Mr. Hill. We had no idea what was exactly supposed to happen next, but I can tell you this, it was a wow. So we're all there, and this sort of soft breeze flew over us, you know, and it caused you to look up. But I mean, there's nothing there. It was just a breeze. But then the breeze did turn into something. Before our eyes, very slowly, there was something taking shape. I mean, the stars we could see were replaced with all black. And then we saw it. It was a vessel. It was one of the most amazing things you could ever see. It was all black, and it had green lights on it, big and small, and it didn't make a sound. I mean, not a sound. And then this, you know, like hatch door out of the bottom slid open, and this glowing sort of green, but you know, you could still see through it, light shot to the ground. It was this beam. And then you could see someone or something slide down it or slowly be lowered. It kind of reminded me of those bank cylinders, you know, at bank drive-thrus, but a lot slower. And the figure just looked dark, so you couldn't tell at first what it really was, but as it got to the ground, you saw it. And this thing was big. It was no little gray alien, I can tell you that, but he was gray, sort of gray and silver. And the way he looked, he would have been like a very big, human-like gray. His face was very harsh, but his body looked more like ours, and it moved like ours. A very big one of us, anyway. But he got down, and then he walked out of that beam, and it stunned all of us. You know, us being my team. Both Jonathan and Mr. Hill knew exactly what it was. And Jonathan greeted him in a simple but professional manner. And Mr. Hill could tell. He just knew that this was not good. This big gray and silver alien with these eyes that shot yellow at you looked at each one of us, you know, me and my team. And he walked up to us and sort of walked right past each one of us, looking us each in the eye. And then I offered that sealed and locked container that we had with the virus in it. And he took it from me, opened it up, pulled out the file that we had and handed that to Jonathan, and then closed this container back up, walked over to the green beam, and he stretched out his arms with it in his hands, and the beam got a hold of it, and just off it went, right back up to this spaceship. Then the alien took one last look at all of us together, and then he closed his eyes and barely lowered his head. And when he opened his eyes again, they were very bright, and then he started to move extremely fast. He turned his head, shooting this glance at Mr. Hill, and then he walked right up to him very quickly. And remember, Mr. Hill is being held by two guys that are bigger already by our standards. But this guy walks up to Mr. Hill, the guys release him, and then this alien just puts his hands to the sides of Mr. Hill and like locks in his grip, picks him up, and then turns back to the green beam, and then in they both go, and up they go. Mr. Hill was in complete shock. He didn't do a thing about it. His eyes were opened wide, and that was the last expression we saw of the man. They went up, and once that beam disappeared, so did the vessel. And I actually asked Jonathan, you know, if anyone would ever see Mr. Hill again, and what he said was that he believed that they would, but not until the aliens were done with whatever they had in store for him. We all sort of cringed at that thought, but there it was. Jonathan got into his limo. We got back to the helicopter. We were, of course, blindfolded again, but eventually we all met back up at the Pentagon. Jonathan had read about Mr. Hill's plans. He read through that file, how he was going to spread it to the masses. I mean, technically, this plague didn't really die off altogether. But with only about 1,000 cases since 1900, you know, we were doing okay. This would have been massive. All Jonathan could say was that Mr. Hill's plans could have breathed life into this intense illness for sure. And let's just remember, it killed 100 million people. And that was back then. We are way more populated now. And then we all had to leave. Our job was done. It was time for us to go. The situation was still out there, but at least my team and I could prove that, you know, some of us can still do it, work together and do the right thing. Mr. Hill could have ruined that for all of us. The job was kind of overwhelming when we thought about the consequences of what could have happened here, but it didn't. Our alien partners were satisfied, as were our human allies managing that partnership. And as for Mr. Hill, some would say he knew what was really going on, who they were, and now he would be punished by the laws and guidelines he went against. I don't know what that punishment was, if he made it back to the Pentagon. It sounded like he would for his next round of, let's say, discipline or corrective action. What was all in that file? What would occur next? I wish I could have been a fly on the wall inside of the Pentagon to know. but I'd also really like to meet who is behind that glass, the Frosteds. But I don't get to. And really, I'm sure it's just as much for my protection as it is theirs. And so it all went, and so it goes. Another job done. Again, it was outrageous. The situation was handled in the end, but the overall situation still exists, right? Believe me, do they think that, you know, you will believe me now when I tell you this story? I mean, look, they know who I am and they know how I work. This vlog is no surprise to them. I just hope that you can appreciate what really happens, what is done for all of us. And like I said, like it or not, there are things going on that most people are not aware of. And that's really just how it works. This man, Mr. Hill, he didn't get what he wanted. But then he had a fit and lost all of his other chances of doing what he did want to do and maybe affecting things in a great way. And the guy was no dummy, but he gave it all up. And like I said in the preview, anger has power, mostly over the person with it. But it doesn't always win. And sometimes it really only has that power over you, and you might find that you lose. I hope you enjoyed this vlog. Be sure to check back for more, subscribe, turn on your notifications if you want those so that you know when I post next. Thank you for listening, and until next time, and I will talk to you all soon.